My eyes are watering. There's a lot of dust in the air. I can't see too well anyway because I pawned my corneas 2 days ago to buy a pair of shoes. The replacements are cheap and ill-fitting, and the anaesthetic wears off quickly, so 15 minutes later, I'd spent all the money in a chemist's on a week's supply of codeine. I ate it outside. I had to lie down on the pavement while the painkillers got round to my eyes. I hung my head over the curb to make them arrive faster. Before she ran away, my wife said this would happen. She even got the date right. I tried to remember the expression on her face when she said it. I had got as far as a large roaring mouth when a pair of shoes appeared next to my head. I thought they looked familiar. They were familiar because I'd lost them in a bet to the art dealer Japhet Corncrake. "That's rather good," he said. "Is this a new performance piece or just a work in progress?" "I sold my eyes," I said. "I can't see." He clapped his hands and jumped up and down, thoroughly impressed. "That's very good. I like it. We must talk about this. Are you very busy this evening? Because I've got a new show on at the gallery, if you'd like to come along." I couldn't say no. I couldn't say anything, because I didn't want to, and words don't form in my mouth when that happens. So he hailed a taxi and pushed me into it. As we drove through London, he talked fluidly about art. Coincidentally, I felt very sick. When I asked him whether perhaps he could return my shoes, he said, "You really will make an excellent installation. Who writes your scripts?" Corncrake's private gallery was full of people. It was also full of water, because it was really a swimming pool with pictures hung round the walls. The guests were swimming round and round and chattering. Corncrake introduced me to a hugely fitted woman called Hymenoptera, who helped me into the pool and gave me a drink. A man called Howard Znack touched me on the nipple and asked me what I thought about the Sarajevo school. I was about to say, "Please help me," when Helen Kollop swam up, popped a cherry in my mouth, kissed my forehead, and asked me how my mother was, and then swam away again without waiting for an answer. Hymenoptera surfaced with a tray of crudités and shot me a greasy wink. It was at this point that the level of codeine in my blood became critical, and the contents of my stomach flew out of my mouth in a surprising yellow jet, which, as my head sank below the surface, acted much like a turbine, propelling me 10 feet backwards through the pool. The last thing I heard was Hymenoptera asking timidly, "Was that supposed to happen?" I'd like to hear some music now, preferably the Bucharest Symphony Orchestra and Chorus performing Ligeti's Requiem, which should be played on a cassette machine with flat batteries. Start the tape now, please. Thanks. Ligeti's incorporation of polyrhythms contrives to produce one of the most difficult and crystalline pieces of music ever written. No piece of music ever summed up death better. No human being ever experienced anything so close to death while still being alive. Edward Heath attended the British premiere and asked the conductor whether he had the right music in front of him. That was before inflation and the 3-day week and candles.
We'll be right back. How do I say your name again?
Martin.
Right, Martin. I think the headaches have a lot to do with your posture at the computer. Can I just look at your tongue? Do you get cold fingertips?
Yes. Sometimes.
I'll just take your pulse. Your spleen is damp. Have you had acupuncture before?
No.
It's important for patients to relax fully before I start treatment. Otherwise, it can be a bit distressing. Now, just put your wrist down by your side. You may feel a little tingle when I put this one in. The nails I use are between 9 and 14 inches long and half an inch thick. Okay, and now 2 in your stomach. They must go through the body part and at least 2 inches into the table. Otherwise, the patient will slide off when I prop them against the wall.
Can you move my head at all?
You don't want to.
Okay. Now, what I'm going to do, Martin, is prop you up on your board. You might feel a little uncomfortable because you're taking a weight of your body on those nails through your arms.
Yep.
So you might want to try and just push down a bit.
Yep.
Often I'll leave several patients together along the walls. Half an hour. They're usually concentrating too much on themselves to notice anything else. Now, Martin, I'm just going to give your stomach nails a little tweak. Can you feel that? This one? Good. Sorry. Oh, Sarah's fainted. All right. Yeah, that's quite normal. All right, Sarah. Just waking you up. All right. There we are. All right. That's it. I think the treatment is very successful.
Deep breaths, everyone.
I've never had a patient come back. We have difficulty getting some of them to leave under their own steam. Just have to leave them out the back. They've normally gone in the morning.
Yeah. 你喺度不过弄随便计门，细次细随便计个人字都改。
It was in 1987 that I had this dream. But it's only now that I realize what it meant. The lyricist Bernie Taupin was on the phone in Los Angeles. At the end of the call, he put the phone down and wrote for an hour, laughing hysterically. I have listened to the new recording of Candle in the Wind and have discovered that if you play it backwards, you can hear a profane message. It says, Jesus and your bush. That's no titchy marrow. This is a bawdy thought about the English rose and who she is with now. This is why Bernie Taupin was laughing in my dream.
It's hard to get angry and laugh at the same time. I must add an ounce of love to everything I do. I must have a forgiving view of events and people. I must have an optimistic view of the world. I must believe that most people are doing the best that they can. Instead of blowing up when someone says something unkind, I should take a moment to rethink the situation. If I can tell myself that the person is probably having a bad day, I mean, we all have our bad days, then there's a good chance I won't get angry. I must understand that a conflict is not a win-lose situation. It's not important who wins or who's right. The goal is to solve a mutual problem through good communication. I must not expect to be treated with fairness and consideration at all times. I must take a few minutes to relax my whole body. I'll shake my shoulders, inhale and exhale deeply a few times, and clear my head of thoughts and concerns. I know what I'll do. The next time I find pressure mounting, I'll take 10 minutes and go for a brisk walk or climb some stairs. Then, when I return to the problem, I'll feel like a new person.
Yeah? Did he? Hmm. 43? Counting the cat. Hmm. A bit of reflection on the auto cue on camera two. No, it doesn't bother me. Oh, Sarah. What have you got for me today?
Right, that's for the peace talks, VT. That's 97 seconds, so you should get the pizza in, no problem. Those Jerusalem artichokes are for you if you've got a few seconds at the end.
Are they tinned?
Yeah.
Well, I've said before, tinned are no good, haven't I?
Yes.
Typical. Then I get fresh truffles and I get a bloody tinned artichoke. Well, I'll just have to spin the pizza out a bit.
Okay. Then Angola, that's 72 seconds, so there's a sandwich and a couple of grapes.
What sort of sandwich?
Hen.
Good.
We've got the Clinton, that's 2.5 minutes from Washington, so you can take a bit of time over the scallops and you could probably fit in 2 miniature pints of beer.
Oh, good, I like those. Yeah, put them there. They're great, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Anything for the sports results?
Some Rams cheese.
Ah, yes, good.
And at 6:28, I'll make sure all the doors between here and the canteen are open, so you should get a clear run.
Lovely, thanks. Okay. Sarah, what happened to the berries?
Well, they're with the full-length Angola VT, so they've gone to the nine.
Gone to the nine?
Yeah.
Well, Sissons doesn't need them. I need the berries. Why is he going to get the berries?
Well, they go with that story.
I know. I ordered them for that story because it was going to be in the six. And I need... Yeah? Well, I know it's been changed, but how do you expect me to do my job when my nutrition's all abused? Well, I won't get the C vitamins or the fructose from that, will I? Sarah, just give me the fucking berries, will you? Well, if I can't have the berries, then I'm not doing it. Yeah? All right. Well, then I'll just have to do the short Angola story twice, and then I'll get 2 lots of grapes. Well, it's either that or nothing. And I'll have to lead with the football results. I'll need that ram's cheese at the top to try and deal with the vitamin risk. No, lead with the sports results. Well, then I won't do it.
But what about this orange?
I can't have a bloody orange.
It's got vitamin C, it's got fructose.
I've got to have the berries. Well, then I'm not doing it. I'm just not going to do it, all right? You know I've got to have my berries, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah? So they'll swap back. Well, why didn't you do that straight away? You could have saved a lot of unpleasantness, couldn't you? Yeah, sure, I'll move it. No, you're right, you can't have my bucket in shot. No. There, is that better? No, it's empty. There, okay. Oh, Sarah.
Yeah?
Could you get me some gum? The stomach acids are really beginning to get to my teeth.
Sure.
Okay, thanks, love. Jesus.
What is death? If I put the barrel of a gun against my forehead and pull the trigger, what will happen? Where will I go? I wonder if expressions we have come casually to use when referring to death actually reflect reality. For example, the term bought the farm. Could it be that when I die, I will actually come into possession of a farm I've purchased with my own money? Is it possible? I bought the farm. I have acres of rolling meadows dotted with clover where sheep and cattle graze. Fields of wheat heavy with grain appear like a great amber ocean, undulating in the wind. I move into a white clapboard house with a shingled roof. The green shuttered windows have parted chintz curtains. Beside the house is a great ancient oak tree, its roots gnarled and twisted. From one of its thick old branches, hanging by a braided rope, is a rubber tire in which many a delighted child has swung up to the sky and back again. Inside my farmhouse, there's a living room with an ancient Emerson radio. The furniture has slipcovers with paisley print, and there's a hooked rug on the oak-planked floor. The fireplace mantle bears a set of family photographs, old daguerreotypes in oval cameo frames. Next to the fireplace are a pair of tongs, a set of bellows, a fire prod, and a pile of neatly split logs. On the second floor of the bedroom, there's an old four-poster bed, the cover a patchwork quilt, the pillows overstuffed with goose down. Next to the bed is a night table with an evening prayer book and a single candlestick. In the hall at the top of the stairs, there's a trap door in the ceiling. When I pull the string that dangles from it, a ladder comes down, leading me up to the musty attic, where grimy light through a single crusted window plays on ancient trunks, bales of old letters held together with faded ribbons, and a card table with three legs. And in the dining room downstairs, farmhands sit at a long trestle table, drinking cups of steaming coffee with double thick cream, eating a big country breakfast. Sunny side and scrambled eggs, crisp bacon, sizzling juicy sausages, pork chops, corned beef hash, sourdough biscuits, hush puppies and cornbread, a great bubbling warm jug of maple syrup next to a pile of pancakes browned at the edges. Fragrant thick slices of French toast sprinkled with cinnamon and sugar, bowls of oatmeal and farina topped with cream, melted butter and molasses, vials of insulin, Dilantin, and small bottles of oxygen being administered by paramedics to farm workers as they deliriously push themselves away from the table and stagger toward the door, each blood-thinning agent, anticoagulant, seizure control medication being injected by a hypodermic needle. The farmhands and red-cheeked farm girls operate the machinery, sluice out the pigsties, repair the fences, seed the corn, and milk the cows who move leisurely among the clover, gather around the salt cowlick, the lowing of their voices and the gentle tinkling of the bells around their necks heard at a great distance. Around evening time, a long, leisurely line of cows, their tails swinging, makes its way heavily toward the barn, the females to be milked, the bulls to stomp irritably in their stalls. And the barn is a huge two-story wood frame structure. There's a wooden ladder, some of the rungs missing, leading up to the loft where a pitchfork can be seen embedded in one of the many wire-bound bales of alfalfa and hay. The air is fragrant. The sun shines through in shafts at oblique angles, creating warm pools of light on the floor. I can see chemical fertilizers, Growswift, MaxiGerm, Proliferam. The pigsty, nearby, is a penned-in muddy area about 20 feet by 30 feet. At the end of it is a trough filled with slop, usually kitchen refuse, and corn husks. The farmhands live nearby in small single-story dirt floor shacks with two sets of double bunk beds and an old Franklin stove. The hoedown, or hootenanny, is a celebration that takes place in the barn, where one of the elders, holding a jug of corn liquor in one hand, calls the square dance. The farmhands wear blue overalls and checked shirts with bandanas around their necks. The girls in gingham dresses, black stockings, high button shoes, some in bonnets, others with cloth tied around their hair. They dance the Virginia reel exuberantly on the floor of the barn. And so, there I am. I've bought the farm, and it all seems so idyllic. A heavenly reward. The only problem is that I borrowed a lot of money from the bank for seed, livestock, and machinery. And now I owe thousands of dollars to the First National Trust. My monthly payments exceed my income. I'm borrowing from friends and church members. Finally, I put on a yard sale in which I sell family heirlooms to strangers, the ancient hand-carved armoire brought from the old country on the back of my grandfather, sepia-tinted Civil War portraits of long-dead ancestors, the cut crystal chandelier from the entrance hallway. and unable to make my mortgage payments. I am facing foreclosure. My entire farm is about to be razed for a new shopping mall. My family, having barricaded itself, having pushed furniture up against the doors, boarded the windows from the inside, awaits the sheriff. He arrives saying, "I'm sorry, I hate to have to be the one to do this," and hammers a writ of foreclosure on the door. I come out and stand on the front porch with a shotgun in my hands, an old double-barreled rusted-out Remington with a rotten wooden stock. I'm still wearing my long johns. The foreman, standing behind the sheriff, has a bored look. He's taken his hard hat off, and his long hair in a ponytail hangs down his back. He's got a hand on one hip, and in the other, he's holding a clipboard and looking over my shoulder, distractedly taking the dimensions of my house, and eyeing my mother, who's huddled behind me. "Look, I have my orders," the foreman says. "If you need a few minutes to get your stuff together, go right ahead. But by noon, I've got to have this thing," he gestures at my house, "out of the way. So put that gun down, because it's not going to do you any good. This is progress. Even if you want to, you can't stand in its way. No matter what you say or do, it's like shouting against the fall of night. Forget it. Give in. It'll be a nice mall. Maybe your mother would like a job. There are some sales positions open at Laura Ashley." Behind the foreman is a three-story tall bulldozer, a huge home-wrecking ball suspended from the end of a giant crane, and behind that, a set of road grading machinery, cement mixers, flatbed trucks with construction crews and hard hats, with riveting machinery and walkie-talkies. And three deputies with sledgehammers and a battering ram bash their way through my barricaded front door. Then the heavy machinery comes through and levels the house and the barn. And my entire farm is overrun in a matter of an hour and a half. And within a week, a new shopping mall has been built. A huge two-story atrium-centered gleaming marble and stainless steel structure with huge vaulted archways, waterfalls, and interior gardens, a giant clear glass dome over the top. A small jazz combo plays at one end and a string quartet at the other. A man in cutaway and tails, white tie and spats sits at a piano on the second level, near where a miniature railroad train takes children squealing and laughing around a small circuit, while shoppers ride scenic elevators that move on vertical monorails. And having been dispossessed, and having lost my farm, I find myself driving to California in a 1932 pickup truck, because I've learned that California is the land of golden opportunity, a Garden of Eden, a paradise where I can get a job picking oranges. But I am somewhat incredulous and perturbed by the fact that I thought I had bought the farm, and now I've lost the farm, and I don't know if I'm living or dead.
Thank you. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak with curly hair. When I need this freak, I need her to be there.
Oh, come on.
I need a freak to treat me right. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak. I really do. I want a freak when he acts and looks like you. I need a freak. Hear what I say. I need a freak to get me through the day. I need a freak to treat me right. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak every day and every night. I need a freak every day.
Barbican, walk to gal, we're American. Run the place like Elephant Man. Tap time like Skellion. Me never forward from London. Son of David Radigan. run the place like elephant man. She's
rich and hot like any con man. Gun pan belly DMX top man. Ride round town pan me little scooter van. Run the place like elephant man. Go water house calling quad 21. Bust out your jelly like coconut man. Left red and white like polka dot man. Run the place like elephant man.
Touching at the street man a icon. Girl in a me car, girl in a me van. Could a black girl, could a white one. Run the street like elephant man. Big bright link pa me right hand. Watch your Rolex pa me left one. Big gold chain pa me chest done. Run the place like elephant man.
Get some thick at girl like Steph London. Jump on pan her like me a Spider-Man. Spread it out wide, make it get wider and run the place like elephant man. Drink a one dragon stout and water and this elephant you get a big brother and cup on the hill go link me big data palm. Run the place like elephant man.
I can't hear my mic anymore. It's gonna take some time, take some. It's gonna take some time, take some. I'll be your drop dead manic pixie dream thing. I'll be here to die for. Tell me what you're feeling. Trying to make my eyes sore. Having trouble seeing.